As a business owner, it's important to keep your business connected. Spectrum Business is committed to keeping your business online whenever and wherever you need us, all backed by the Spectrum Commitment. Get fast, reliable internet starting at $40 per month when bundled, or level up your internet speed and get a 3-year price guarantee. Learn how Spectrum Business can help your business stay connected at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
This is Issues 2020. I'm Steve McIntosh, and our guest is Tim Norton, Executive Director, Kansas Aviation Museum. Welcome to Issues 2020.
Thanks, Steve. It's great being on. You know, I was trying to think, this is like my fifth or sixth time visiting with you over the years as mayor of Hayesville or county commissioner. I think we even did it a couple of times when I was with Target, so it's exciting to have kind of a new hat on to talk about.
Yeah, how long have you been the director of the museum now, Tim?
Just a little over a year. I started right after Labor Day last year, and we've just passed that, so a little over a year.
And before that, of course, you spent several years on the Sedgwick County Commission. How many years were you there, Tim?
16 years.
16 years, and before that, mayor of Hayesville, right?
Yeah, for a couple of years, or 4 years, and went through the tornado, and then prior to that, 22 years with Target Stores here in Wichita.
I think that the first time we ever chatted or did an interview was after the tornado, when we followed up on that, and I remember that you were very much in command of the situation, and I was impressed. You knew what was going on, and you did a great job. So,
thanks. You know, in your life, you get thrown into things like that, and you either buck up and try to do the right thing, or you run away from it. And I tried to wade into it and do what was right for my constituents and for my community and my family.
Yeah. Hey, listen, let's talk about the Aviation Museum. And I always said one of the best-kept secrets we have in the entire state of Kansas. And so a lot of this is going to be educational today. I think there are people listening to us today who have never been there and don't even know what the Kansas Aviation Museum is. So let's start off with some basics. Where is it located, Tim?
It's on George Washington Avenue South. 3350 South George Washington. If you take George Washington South, it'll dead end right at the museum. It's the old original municipal airport. It's had several lives. McConnell Air Base had it as their administrative building after it was decommissioned as our airport. But it's the original Art Deco municipal airport for the city of Wichita.
Yeah, this is the one that was there before. In the 1950s, they built the one out west. But this was the old municipal airport, a major airline hub in the central U.S. at one time, right?
Well, it was. It was designed in 1929, and then, of course, the Great Depression hit, and the stock market crash, and money dried up. And it was completed in 1935 by the Work Progress Administration. And it served Wichita until Mid-Continent was built. And during the war years, Steve, it was the fourth busiest airport in the United States. Of course, the bombers were being built here. This was a postal hub, and it was also a refueling hub. So a lot of passenger planes and other planes came through here, and so it was a very, very busy airport.
You're talking about a WPA project during the Great Depression, and projects like not only that, but the Golden Gate Bridge, the Boulder Dam. People did a lot of good stuff in that. It's Art Deco, so it's a reflection of the time. And I know that building, you still have Art Deco, what do you call it, interior? Art Deco interior.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it celebrates not only the aviation heritage, but the Native American heritage. So some of the graphics and frescoes inside are very, very unique to only our airport. Now, there were several of these Art Deco airports built around the United States. Very few of them still exist, and truthfully, ours is the only one that really has been restored and is used for something purposeful.
Now, let's talk about a little bit more about Wichita at that location as a terminal, because as I understand it, and I've been there and I've done some stories about it, there are the famous people back in the 30s and 40s, very famous people stopping in there, and a lot of pictures down there, right?
Oh, absolutely. And there's a very famous story about Fred Astaire coming through, and he had a layover, so he ended up dancing in the terminal building for all the people that were there. And another great story is that as the airports were being built, Charles Lindbergh came to Wichita and helped pick the site and really said Wichita was a great place for refueling, and that's one of the reasons we got such a great airport during that era.
Yeah, that's renovations have been underway for several years, isn't that correct?
Yeah, and you know, we continue to work on that. We've got several parts of the museum that are still not in great shape, and we've got grants out to refurbish them and renovate them and put them into usage, not only for the public, but for exhibits and storage.
How many people actually visit the museum in a year, Tim?
Well, we were trending towards a little over 30,000, and of course then the pandemic hit, but our goal is to get to 50,000 in the next 2 years, and I think we'll do that with our new exhibits that we've got coming. We've just got to get through the pandemic and all the kind of shutdowns that we've had in society.
Yeah, like everybody else, everybody's feeling the crunch from the pandemic, and you are too then.
Well, we are as far as attendance and membership, but we've been very fortunate. Staff has stayed focused. We continue to innovate. We've got several new exhibits being done, some renovations. We've got some new planes that volunteers have restored that'll soon be put into the museum. So we have not sat on our hands during this time. We've made sure that we took advantage of all the time that we had to think and to work.
Now, tell me, Tim, how is a museum funded?
Well, memberships help fund it. Donations help fund it. Daily attendance helps fund it. We have several events that we play on a plane brings in money for us. We have a gala that brings in significant money. We have a Hall of Fame event where we induct some people into the Kansas Hall of Fame. We have multiple sources. But one of the things I've really worked on and focused on in the last year is grants. And right now we've got 7 or 8 grants out to major foundations to maybe bring in some money to build new exhibits or to renovate parts of the museum.
Has that been a problem over the years? I mean, this has been going on for quite a while, the Aviation Museum. Has it always been
something? The Aviation Museum, it will be 30 years old this next April, and it's had its highs and lows, its ups and downs. But it's no different than a lot of nonprofits and museums. I mean, if you're not raising money, you're looking at raising money, or you just finished up raising money. It is just the nature of the business for nonprofits to try to have funding. You know, many foundations and individuals don't want to put much money into operating, into payroll. They will into things that can be named or built. And that makes it problematic. So attendance and memberships and individual donations are very important to us.
When you said you have grants out, what you mean is, are you saying you have applications out for grants from these different places?
Absolutely. Okay. We've spent a large amount of our time working on putting together grant applications to foundations, and most of them are very specific to certain things that we want to accomplish in the museum, whether it's a new exhibit or an area that needs some refurbishing or some technology upgrades. All of them have a specific emphasis that we've tried to focus on.
Now, when you make a grant like that, I don't know much about this, but when you do a grant like that, I presume you're going to put some sort of a audiovisual display, or maybe even go out in person and make a presentation. Is that the way it works?
In some cases, yes. We do videos. We of course, now we're not doing very many in-person kinds of grant applications, so most of it has been written with maybe a phone call follow-up. But, you know, generally, yes, you do a full-line presentation to tell your story.
Are there vintage aircraft on permanent display, Tim?
Yeah, we've got quite a few. And we're fortunate that we've got one of the major restoration areas for vintage planes probably in the country. We've got almost 100 volunteers that have worked in the aviation industry building planes. Many of them have resumes of 30 and 40 years working in the factories and on the lines, either engineering or actually building planes. And they volunteer to restore vintage planes.
So what planes?
That's pretty exciting.
What planes do you have? Tell me about one or two.
Well, we have a stagger wing, a beach stagger wing.
Okay.
We've got a Mooney Mite. We've got a Stearman, a Texaco plane. We've got a Watson Skylark. I mean, it just goes on and on. And now we're working on Blanche Noyes's Cessna. We're working on Louis Thaden's Swallow to come, or Travel Airs, excuse me, to come to Wichita. All of those are vintage planes that you can't reproduce anywhere else, and they're not totally one of a kind, but there's very few of them in existence.
So your intention is to go to find and display even more then, huh?
And in fact, in the next couple of years, we'll have a major capital campaign to try to build a significant hangar to house all the planes that we have the potential of reclamating and renovating and rebuilding to restoration, and then house them not out on the flight line, not, you know, on a tarmac, but in a building where people can get up close and personal, and they don't weather so bad.
That's an exciting idea. Hey, you're listening to Issues 2020 on the Intercom radio stations, and our guest is Tim Norton, Executive Director, Kansas Aviation Museum. Tell us about some of your permanent displays and exhibits there in the museum.
Yeah. Well, we've highlighted several of the major companies and early pioneers of aviation in Wichita. We have a Cessna exhibit, which is now Textron. We have a Beechcraft exhibit that honors Walter Beech and Ollie Van Beech. Ryan Aviation, we've got a nice exhibit. We're working on a Women of Aviation exhibit. We're working on a Learjet, trying to get some information on how we can do something on Learjet. So we'll continue to try to tell the story. You know, there's always been this idea that flight was born in North Carolina, but I always say that it was raised and grew up in Wichita, Kansas, because if you talk about Cessna and Beech and Stearman and Swallow and Travel Air and Lear, you can go on and on and on about planes and companies and people that were very instrumental in early aviation.
And how has your support been from the aircraft companies? I know they've had some tough times recently, but have they generally here locally been supportive of what you've been doing?
They have. And, of course, they have to look at their bottom lines, too, right now. And fortunately, we've been able to, you know, weather this storm because of the ways we've maximize the money we do have. But the companies have always been really good to us to be sure that we're taken care of. But it's been a tough time for them this last year, too.
I want to ask you about a couple of services or programs that you have going on there that I found on your webpage, and I thought I'd follow up with this. For instance, what is Senior Wednesday?
Well, we offer a great program for the seniors to come. It's half price for them. And then we have a program of a speaker that talks to aviation, and that rotates. Our education director, Megan Bierman, puts that together. And we've had some wonderful speakers over the years that talk about the history of aviation, We've had Ed Phillips and Larry Hatteberg and quite a few others that have come in and made it their presentation just glow about aviation and our history.
So this is a good time for me to point out that you do, like just about everybody else in the world, you do have a webpage, right?
We do. It's www.kansasaviationmuseum.org. We are on Facebook. We're in constant contact. We do Instagram. We try to get the word out various ways, Steve, for the public to know what we're doing.
Now, Tim, what is Little Aviators Every Friday?
Well, that's a great program. It's for kids 1 to 5, and it teaches them basic concepts of flight. And it's a fun activity. Our education director puts that on. And we're very lucky now that we've Wells Aircraft out of Hutch has signed on to help us underwrite some of that. So you might want to go to the website if you've got a 1 to 5 year old and find out about that, because that's going to be between now and the end of the year is going to be really good for families.
Now, you've talked about a little bit about this, but does the major fundraising efforts, do you have two or three of them you do every year, Tim?
We do, and unfortunately, this last year, we canceled all of them. We had two Play on a Plane scheduled. We had our big Wheels Up Gala scheduled for October, in fact, and all of those got canceled. We just couldn't have a large enough gathering to make it worthwhile, and it was going to have to be social distance, and it would cut the attendance down almost by 75%. So we have moved those to the spring and summer of next year, but we've made it through. We've been lucky that we had some money saved up. We got a little bit of the PPP money, and our staff has really done a good job holding things together.
So what is the role of volunteers at the Kansas Aviation Museum, Tim?
Well, they serve. They certainly work in the restoration shop, working on planes. And I tell you, we couldn't do that without them. So, there's so many of them that have skills that to work on wood and fabric planes that's almost a dying art. It's a craft, and so we've got those skills. They also serve as docents. They help with the little aviators. They help on senior Wednesdays and on Thursdays when we have special events. Yeah. They are really very important to the museum.
Do you need more volunteers?
We'll never pass up a volunteer. If somebody has a certain skill set, loves aviation, or just wants to do some volunteer work, we're always looking for people to help us out.
Your long experience in Wichita, Sedgwick County, Hayesville, and whatnot, I'm sure you share this observation that volunteers are such a big part of almost everything that goes on here in our community. They're active in just about everything.
Well, we're very fortunate that Wichita is one of those places where volunteerism and giving back the community and the common good is important to the individuals and the community. I mean, from the United Way and all our nonprofits and River Festival and places where volunteers are critical. It's been very gratifying for me to watch that in the 40 years that I've been here.
Is the museum available for private events?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, we do weddings, conferences, big birthday events, anniversaries, and Grace Coyne is our venue rental coordinator. She can be found on the website. We can house upwards to 280 people for an event, and we can do tables with nice linens and decorations and all the fineries of big events. So we do weddings, wedding receptions, rehearsal dinners, and other events. And I got to tell you, Steve, with the lighting and the terminal area, it looks pretty spectacular when it's decorated.
You know, our class, our high school class, we're almost notorious for every 5 years we have a reunion. We've done them at Exploration Place. We've done them at Rolling Hills Country Club. And it sounds to me like we might want to call you when we have our next reunion. What do you think?
Well, I can tell you, on that evening, the people that get to go up in the control tower and look out over Wichita from the south side and see right into downtown and it being lit up, it's a pretty spectacular place to have an event.
And, of course, we may be limited on that for a while with the pandemic, right?
Unfortunately, yes. But we're hoping that, you know, we can get kind of back to the new normal after the first of the year and we can have some larger events.
Now, what is the biggest challenge for you and the Kansas Aviation Museum, Tim?
Just to continue to stay focused on making sure we have the resources we need to grow the museum and make it better. There's some gaps in our storytelling that I believe we need to work on, and we've challenged ourselves to do that. We just put in a theater that seats around 30 people to show videos, and we're showcasing the KPTS documentary by Chris Franks, The Air Capital, Wichita, and we're lucky to have that. That's being sponsored by Bank of America, and we would urge people to come and enjoy the museum, but sit for a little while and see the video that really showcases the companies and the people and the places that have made Wichita the air capital of the world.
You know, any attraction like this, I always think about how do you market it? How do you get the word out to people in Oklahoma or over in Missouri, the people that are looking for places to go and see? Do you have any tours come in, things like that?
Well, every day that I stop in and to the museum, I'm looking at the license plates, very similar to what I did when I was with Target Stores. I check out the license plates and see where people are coming from. And it is amazing that the people that come through here from other places to stop at the museum. So they found out about the museum via marketing magazines, trade magazines, and we've got people from all over the United States and internationally coming to our museum.
Education-wise, back to that, do you have many tours from schools that school and classes come out?
I tell you, when we were at full force last year, absolutely. We had school tours coming all the time. Our education director had platforms for them and activities so the kids could learn. It was really a STEM program. It really talked about the science of flight, from lift to drag to gravity to stick and rudders. I mean, we were teaching kids the science of aviation.
So what's new and exciting in the future? I mean, we'll get past this pandemic. What's new and exciting at the Kansas Aviation Museum?
Well, we're working on the Women of Aviation exhibit right now, and that's going to showcase as many women as we can uncover that had any kind of recognition in the state of Kansas, from Amelia Earhart to Ollie Van Beach to Mary Von Syk, who was the first woman controller in the United air controller in the United States, to Rosie the Riveter, to Louise Thaden and Blanche Noyes, who flew in powder puff derbies. We're looking for as many prominent women and women that worked in aviation as we can to showcase in our Women of Aviation. And that's sponsored by Fidelity Bank. So we're working on that, too. We haven't opened it yet. The ribbon cutting will probably be after the first of the year. But we're going to have some exciting new things to talk about for the next year. We've redone our Black Aviators area. We have put in a library, a reading room and library. Fred and Sue Berry helped us out with that. So we just continue to try to grow and change and update our offerings to the public. The next thing we're really working on, Steve, is making all of our exhibits interactive, with touch screens and QR codes and the ability for people to self-guide themselves through the storytelling of aviation history in Kansas.
I'm excited about this new thing you're doing. I want to say to you, Tim, that over the years working with you as a media person, you've always been absolutely delightful. You've been a very open person. You've been patient with us when we ask our stupid questions. And I've enjoyed working with you over the years. And you have a pretty good sense of humor about everything going on, too. So I just want to tell you how much I appreciate what you're doing. And, hey, good luck with this new thing at the Kansas Aviation Museum.
Well, we're pretty excited about it. Once we get through the limitations of the pandemic, I'd say we're ready to fly at the museum.
Wow. Did you think that up, or was it somebody else help you with that?
No, I had it written down. I found it in a book somewhere.
Well,
I'd like to say I think that fast, but I don't,
you
Steve.
Don't. Okay. Well, listen, again, thanks for being with us, and best of luck to you. We appreciate your time, spending time with us today, and look forward to the future as this pandemic lifts and things get going at the Kansas Aviation Museum. Our guest this week is Tim Norton, Executive Director, Kansas Aviation Museum, and that's all for this edition of Issues 2020. We'll be back next week. Thank you all for listening. I'm Steve McIntosh.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Can't get enough baseball? Start streaming MLB Network today. Get up to 15 out-of-market games a week live on any device, plus 24/7 access to MLB Network's award-winning shows, including live game look-ins and exclusive player interviews. And hear live radio play-by-play from all 30 clubs with MLB at Bat. Enjoy the home of baseball from virtually anywhere. Plans start as low as $5.99 per month. Sign up now at MLBNetwork.com/stream. Available in the U.S. only. Blackout restriction applies. Visit MLB.com/subscribe for full terms and conditions.
College holds a mythic place in American culture, but there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast. Available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.